This is On Target St. John's, a look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know? The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon and happy Friday to everybody on this shortened work week for those of you who are working at this particular time. Heading into the weekend now, some cooler temperatures afoot, so make sure you got your, jacket, comforter, raincoat available to you if you happen to be out and about enjoying your staycation this weekend. Well, our guest today is with the Violence Prevention Avalon East. She's a member of the board of directors. Her name is Courtney Clark. Hello, Courtney.
Hello, how are you, Linda?
I'm good. I'll start right off the bat with the simple question. What's your role with Violence Prevention Avalon East?
I'm a member at large with Violence Prevention Avalon East on their board of directors. I started off volunteering. I noticed that Violence Prevention Avalon East has done amazing work in our community in terms of advocacy and just early intervention activities. But I noticed that their online presence was a little out of date. So myself and my friend Lauren Pike actually got together and offered to provide a new website rebranding to Valerie. And over the course of months of creating that, I got to know Val, I got to know the organization and just the positive impact it makes across the province. And by January, I was on the board of directors, and I do a lot around the programming and creating things such as the platform for Unsafe at Home, the domestic abuse support platform, and other things that you'll see coming up soon in terms of online webinars and what have you.
So what drew you to Violence Prevention Avalon East? What does the organization do that made you say, I'd like to help out here?
Well, Violence Prevention Avalon East, it's really interesting because in the year 2000, it started off as just a group of women sitting around at someone's kitchen table that noticed gaps that were not being met for women and children who were experiencing violence in our community. And around the kitchen tables, they were helping women flee violent situations, offering empowerment circles. Fast forward 20 years later, we have 10 offices across the entire province, including Labrador, and we are very much involved in policy discussions, lobbying for enhanced services, and we're involved in so many different things within the community. So it's amazing how their cross-sectional approach, where violence is something that is experienced by all groups in society, is become very impactful, especially with the pandemic. So when I started to notice just the real impact that they were making, I knew that I could play a role in enhancing their communications to make sure that more people knew just exactly what they were doing.
This has been a really challenging time, of course, for organizations,
yeah,
groups, businesses, individuals, you name it. There were some pretty serious concerns during the height of the pandemic lockdown that incidents of violence and abuse were still happening, but not being reported. What have you learned?
Well, the Unsafe at Home platform has taught us quite a bit. A lot of times when it comes to people experiencing domestic violence, the obvious thing that a lot of people suggest is go to the police. But as we know, the police have really only seen a 10% increase in calls. And the reason for that is people don't reach out for support regarding domestic violence, especially the first time, and especially if they have children. They don't reach out to the police. They would much feel more comfortable with the confidentiality of nonprofits. So Violence Prevention and now the new Domestic Abuse Helpline are that natural first step in seeking help out of violent situations. You know, we're a safe space. You can reach out to us for support, vent any frustrations or concerns. You can take all the time you need, and then from there, we can help you. Through that, we've learned, you know, that even though the official report is that there's a 10% increase by law enforcement, we have had calls. We've gone from 1 to 2 calls a day to 10 different calls a day, and it is spanning every kind of lifestyle, economic situation, gender, religion, culture. It's prevalent everywhere.
So that's a pretty big leap. What was happening during that lockdown period then to prevent people from feeling like they could make that call?
Well, a lot of what happens is because a lot of the services were shut down, a lot of times people who are isolated at home with their abusers, they don't have that access to internet or to a phone to know what's happening in the community, but also what resources are available to help them. They often don't have, because their partner could be home or not working more, that they don't have an opportunity to seek that help. And a huge tactic of abuse is either withholding PPE or basically putting the fear of COVID-19 to stop someone from entering a hospital to seek help if they've been hurt, or to go into a police station or go to a nonprofit because of the fear that they could get COVID.
So COVID actually added to that sense of control.
In a way, it did. It did. And it's, and abuse is very complex in that way. So we decided that with the Unsafe at Home platform, the way that we would control that situation and essentially try to help is we had two target audiences. So we made sure that information was up to date and available on the website just in case someone did get that 5-minute opportunity to Google for help. And we were very, we used a trauma-informed perspective to form the vocabulary so that the algorithms work in our favor, that we are that first result that shows up if you're seeking any kind of violence-related support in Newfoundland. But what really helped was that our other main focus was on the bystanders, because, like I said, we do recognize that people who are isolated with their abusers, they may have limited or no access to that internet or outside world. So we need to empower the people who aren't in those dangerous situations to understand the safest way to support that loved one who is in an abusive situation. So if you go to the platform of www.violencepreventionae.ca and click the Unsafe at Home image on the main page, you'll find education for bystanders. We talk about the potential red flags that the general public could see within social circles and the neighborhood. And we want you to know how to safely and effectively address those concerns, because there's no one piece of advice that you can give someone who is in crisis.
Courtney Clark is with the Violence Prevention Avalon East organization. She's on the board of directors. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Courtney Clark. She's with Violence Prevention Avalon East. She's a member of the board of directors there, and she's played an important role in putting together some programs there as well. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about this Unsafe at Home platform. This is your baby, so to speak. What led to its creation?
Well, our organization, along with so many other women's organizations, have been rallying for the domestic abuse hotline for so many years. And we noticed that there weren't any kind of daily briefing updates on the domestic violence issue that was present. So we were just kind of sitting around saying, is there anything that we can do to fill this gap while we're waiting for this? So we came up with Unsafe at Home. And this domestic abuse support platform coordinates local resources during the pandemic. I update it all the time. I updated it again last night. And it's basically just a way to empower others to get out of abusive situations, to encourage them to call us for more information based on their particular situation, and to empower the bystanders in people's lives who are being abused to stand up and how to safely address those concerns.
Will it stay in place now that this hotline is up and running?
Yes. So we are going to make sure that this stays in place, and we are still available even with this domestic abuse hotline. Of course, the domestic abuse hotline is phone and text capable. It automatically picks up on your region and will transfer you to the closest transition house for a professional who will be able to give you all the same kind of information that we do. So it's the official line for the entire province, but we are still available for support. Continue to update this.
Who have you been hearing from? Is it primarily women? Is it children, families, loved ones, friends who are concerned?
We have heard from everyone. Besides the different types of community support. Sorry, that's my dog.
That's fine.
The realities of COVID life, right?
Exactly.
So the type of people that have been coming out and reaching out to us, we have had quite a few people who are in domestic violence situations reach out for support. New Canadians, seniors, women with children are the main ones. But we've also had a lot of calls from people on reaching out on behalf of others, people saying, you know, I was reading the red flag details on your website, and I know a neighbor that might need support. What do I do for them? Or we've also had several guidance counselors who know children that are stuck in abusive households looking for ways to support them since school was their safe haven.
And that was another concern as well, because teachers are often very in tune to what's happening in a family dynamic. And there was a real concern during the pandemic, as soon as school closed or classes ended, that some children would end up off the radar screen, so to speak. Have you heard from others like that, professionals who might have normally had interactions with families or children in particular who lost that contact?
It's mostly been the guidance counselors who've been trying to keep in touch. But we also have another board member who is the founder of Miles for Smiles, Bev, and she has been doing a significant amount of work around advocacy for looking out for children as well in this situation.
So the new domestic violence support line is up and running. What kind of an uptake is it receiving?
Well, with the number is 1-888-709-7090. I personally don't have any details about the actual new domestic violence helpline. The Transition Houses NL would be the best one to speak to, but I do know that, I do hope that people are encouraged to reach out to that, since that is a new official resource that we have.
And that's available anywhere in the province?
The whole province, text or phone capable. It'll automatically tell where you are and put you in touch with someone who is the physically closest to you. And they're trained professionals.
Certainly. Is there any particular group or individual who are more vulnerable to others when it comes to violence?
Everybody is. I mean, again, we have to take that cross-sectional approach, because you could have someone who is in a violent relationship who has children but also has a disability, or is a senior, or is in the LGBTQ community, or a new Canadian. So it's really been all across the board, and we've had to be very mindful of all of the organizations in relation to that, and especially in terms of, say, mental health and food insecurity and financial issues. Those are the things that cause big stressors and often lead to increased abuse. So we look more so for those indicators of abuse versus a type of person, because violence is prevalent and it can happen anywhere.
Do socioeconomic factors tend to play a role?
Oh, most definitely. And that's why we have to step up. And basically anyone who is in a situation where they might be afraid that they can't afford to live on their own and leave the relationship, that they need that two-income household, or they don't have a job at the moment, there are still services in place for you if you're experiencing those problems. So we are here advocating to let you know that it doesn't matter what you're facing in terms of socioeconomic issues, you are still deserving of a happy, healthy life free from the fear of violence, no matter what situation you're in or who you are.
Is the goal here to get a person or family out of an abusive situation, or is the goal to, you know, lay charges and bring justice to the situation?
Our focus is whatever the focus of the individual caller. So if they are not ready to make that leap and leave the domestic abuse situation, we have to respect that, and we do what we can to tell them what does exist if they want to take that next step. But we also give them advice on how to mitigate those issues while they are in that household. From there, if they want to know about different types of justice-related support, legal support, we can offer that as well. So at any point, whether you are just experiencing it for the first time, you've been experiencing violence for years and it's getting worse, or you know someone who is, no matter what point you are in that, whether you've experienced it in the past or now, we're here for you.
Violent situations within relationships, do they tend to evolve over time, or is it sort of suddenly and then you're in it?
It does depend on the individual person. Generally, abusers will look for opportunities to do it, say, behind closed doors or warm them up. Something that we have heard over the pandemic is some abusers are being a little less abusive to show the example that, oh, look, your parents and your family aren't around and they're the ones that cause the stress, which is a more long-term psychological abuse to isolate them away from their family permanently. We also have situations where you have people who have things, different types of mental health issues, where they may be a great person in a really bad situation, and no matter how much you love that person, you can't allow yourself to be disrespected or violently hurt or put in face of danger. So, you know, there's so many different complex situations with it that it's all based on the individual situation.
These situations, as we often hear about, you know, I know it's all individual, but there do tend to be some markers from time to time that sort of makes everything similar in many ways. But there are a lot to do with control, lot to do with insecurities, those sort of things. And we talked a little bit before about how COVID might have helped an abuser to exert control, but it also allowed them to keep control. What you just mentioned there was very interesting, that in some cases the abuse got better because there was another factor helping them control their situation.
Exactly. It helps promote the isolation piece. And we see that in, also we see forms of abuse from COVID in the forms of withholding PPE. So, you know, if they don't have the mask, they don't have sanitizer, and then instilling those fears that you could get COVID, they're less inclined to go out into the public. And they're not as easily able to go to grocery stores or their workplace that might have been their safe haven during all of this. We also see situations that if they are in the home and their partner is also now in the home because of COVID-19, they don't have that same access or freedom to get a hold of a cell phone or the internet to know what's happening. So oftentimes an abuser, if they're controlling that part of your life, they can pick and choose what they show you to keep instilling that fear.
It strikes me too that it's a avenue for them to say, well, you can't go see your loved ones, you can't go see your friends because you could be bringing COVID back to the house. We can't have that.
Exactly.
You know that you're not feeling well, you know that I'm not well, you know that the children are not well, or whatever the case may be. So there's a lot of added psychological pressure.
Yep. Some people are forced out of their homes because the partner kicks them out in the middle of bad weather because they say, you're going to give me COVID because you went out. They could be locked in because they say they don't want you to give COVID to the family. There's so many different ways in which the fears of COVID can be utilized to really enhance that domestic violence. So that's why it is more important than ever as a bystander to know what these signs are and to know how to communicate with your loved ones and to ask those questions. It's better to ask and get a no and feel a little embarrassed or awkward than it is to not bring it up and then find out something much worse happened.
Well, let's talk a little bit about those signs from the Unsafe at Home platform right after this. My guest today is Courtney Clark. She's with the Violence Prevention Avalon East, and we'll be back.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guest today is a member of the Board of Directors with Violence Prevention Avalon East, Courtney Clark. We've been talking about the situation faced by people living in abusive situations during the pandemic. And one of the tools that is being used to help people in those circumstances is the Unsafe at Home platform, Domestic Abuse in the Age of COVID-19. And Courtney, right there on the front page is exactly what we've been talking about. Quotations, just stay at home. You're safe at home. You'll be safer if you stay inside. Some of those messages that an abuser can use to their advantage.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
So also contained on this platform is how to spot signs of abusive behavior. So what are some of those signs that people shouldn't ignore?
There are quite a few, but some that stand out is, does your loved one seem irritated or dismissive when you ask about their partner? Do they seem distant and don't want to talk about their life? Do they avoid video chatting? If because they might be trying to hide certain wound inflictions, or the partner might be withholding that technology. If they seem hyper aware or jumpy, communication pattern changes, unhealthy daily routines as unhealthy coping mechanisms. These are all signs that something isn't right in the home.
And if you are in a relationship that, you know, has the potential to be abusive, what kind of things should you be watching for? Because sometimes these things, as we talked about earlier, evolve over time. You're sort of in it and invested before you find out that things have gone terribly wrong.
Mm-hmm. So with that, it might start off as looking like a relationship that moves a bit too quickly, and that would be based on the pressure of, say, the person who is would inevitably do the abusing. And it could look like jealousy in terms of any person that you're talking to, questioning who is it, how do you know them, questioning your whereabouts or something that you say. It could be anything along those lines, really. If you start to feel like you're being questioned or your integrity is in question, that's a huge red flag right there.
Sort of, you talked about a relationship that moves along too quickly, sort of being swept off your feet, so to speak.
Essentially, yeah, as though your prince or princess charming has come along and everything is perfect, and then all of a sudden you're either maritally bound and living with them and it's a little bit harder to get away, or they start to kind of pick up on or start to tell you things negatively about your family or your friends and try to distance you away from them and just spend time with that partner instead of getting out and possibly hearing opinions or perspectives from those loved ones who may start to see that concern themselves.
One of the things you keep hearing is trust your gut. We all have a tendency, regardless of the situation, to reason things away. No, that couldn't possibly be the way it is. It's got to be these things. You know, we do that in every circumstance in our life, but you really need to listen to that little niggling something is telling you something.
Yes, there is a reason if your gut is questioning you like that, or if you're kept up at night thinking, if you think something might not be right, it probably isn't. And a lot of us who are involved in Violence Prevention Avalon East and other types of organizations like this, we do this because we're survivors of violence ourselves. And I can attest to that myself, having been a survivor of a random act of violence. My gut was telling me something wasn't right, but then there was another voice in my head stating, no, like just hold on and see where this goes. And then it was too late. And you can't beat yourself up over that, because the thing is, they are trying to manipulate you, and you're trying to see the best in them. So the first thing you have to do is hold yourself accountable, but don't blame yourself for that, because at the end of the day, we are all good people trying to see the best in one another.
There's also a fear, though, if it's somebody you know and love and care about very deeply, and you see them in a situation that just doesn't seem right, and you want to say something and you want to do something and you've asked them about it and they keep denying that there's anything wrong, you're sort of bound by society in some ways not to interfere. How do you break through those barriers?
You have to go about it safely, because you don't want to put that person in more danger, and you don't want to put yourself in danger either. So at any opportunity that you can get that person alone, even if it's they are going to go check their mail and you can find a way to intercept or to get that 5-minute phone call when they have their once a biweekly grocery run, try and hit those moments and find out when they are, and just make yourself known. Keep texting or calling or messaging them to show that you're still available, even if they keep denying it or stop communicating with you altogether. Just make sure they know you're there and that you know something is up. Something else that some people do is they'll drop off, they'll say they were in the area and they had some baked goods and they wanted to go drop it off, just as an excuse to knock on the door, step back and remain socially distanced and see what happens when someone knocks. And then you see that person in face-to-face and have a bit more validation. So there's a ton of different examples as to how you can approach it, but the main thing is make sure that you are remaining in their life and that you're remaining present and that they know you're a safe person to reach out to when they are ready.
Self-preservation is a big thing as well, and the preservation of the safety of your loved ones, your children, your pets, your elderly parents, because, you know, there could be threats or perceived threats, implied threats against the people in your life. And the victim in many cases wants to maintain some kind of control over the situation because they feel like other things are out of control. So when you're approaching someone like that and you're saying, look, do you need some help? Their first reaction is probably going to be, no, everything is fine.
Right.
How do you read that?
You have to respect what they say to you at the end of the day. And unless you think that they're in immediate danger, you know, a real immediate danger, you really shouldn't step across that line that they may stop actually viewing you as a safe space to speak out to. But just, again, keeping present with it and sharing that information on your social networks and saying, hey, oh my goodness, I just read a cool news article that the government has a free pet safekeeping program and the RNC Intimate Violence Partner Unit has a free lock exchange program. How neat is that? And just kind of throwing it into conversation if it becomes a more hostile, or not hostile, but I guess they're pushing back on replying to you with what's going on. Just kind of throw out those different suggestions as well so they know that there is something available and remind them of the good news that's happening and say, oh my goodness, I'm so happy that there are no cases in NL right now of COVID, and making sure that those little side conversations you're having is also providing them news that may be withheld from them.
Well, that's an important aspect of things because they might be isolated in the information that they're receiving or how it's being filtered to them. So it's important to have those conversations and keep those resources and sources available, if you will. So how do you do your homework? How do you get those? Is there one-stop shopping for finding those resources?
So Unsafe at Home, the platform, has the local support directory. It'll tell you exactly who every single entity is and what their current service offerings are based on the pandemic. And it's actually broken down into 10 different categories. So crisis contacts, housing and shelters, mental health and addictions, food insecurity, families, youth, children, LGBTQ seniors, people with disabilities, immigrants, refugees, and indigenous persons, and then crime prevention and justice. And of course, there's inevitably more services and offerings out there that may have slipped the group cracks that aren't on here, but we can go through those in conversation if you give us a call, email us, Facebook message us. But we try to keep every single bit of information up to date and as easy to understand as possible so that at any point that you go on that site, you know exactly what is available to you at this very moment.
Courtney Clark with Violence Prevention Avalon East is my guest today on Target St. John's. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today is Courtney Clark. She's with Violence Prevention Avalon East. And Courtney, as we've all watched evolve over the last number of weeks and months, the situation in the United States and as well as here in Canada has led many to lose their trust in police and law enforcement across the country. Have you seen any of that around here? And is that an issue as far as you can see in people reaching out for help?
Most definitely, because a lot of people, especially if it's their first time reaching out, and again, if they have children, they're afraid of something either not following through or, for example, they're afraid that they're going to have their children taken away from them, even if they're trying to provide a better life for all of them. So these are some real fears that we do hear from the people who call us. And oftentimes they feel more confident confiding those major details, especially the first time, with someone who has a counseling background in the nonprofit, who's on the ground, grassroots oriented, and sees the day-to-day implications of things that they're going through as well. So, and again, we do have the RNC Intimate Partner Violence Unit who do amazing work, a lot of female leadership within that, and they offer free lock exchange programs if you feel unsafe in your home. The cities have the pet care program, but oftentimes if you're seeking shelter to get away from danger, if you're having food insecurity and you're looking for food, mental health services with the long wait lists and canceled non-essential appointments, your nonprofits are filling in those gaps and are probably going to be able to help you get the advice or the services you need a lot quicker.
Have police organizations made the changes necessary to make them more accessible, if you will, to people who might have fears or concerns about that?
The Intimate Partner Violence Unit is a great first start, and more loosely, the provincial government partnering with the transition houses versus having actual government employment or employees doing the phone calls is a huge progress, but there is still quite a bit of progress to be made.
What are some of the challenges and barriers? Because I know you have a day job, so to speak. You do a lot of work with various communities as well. What are some of the challenges and barriers faced by different groups, Indigenous Canadians, for instance, or new Canadians?
Yeah, so oftentimes, it's with, especially new Canadians, if there's any type of language barriers, if they don't know a lot of people in their communities, they may not have access to certain types of federal funding programs. They may see a barrier, and that's why we are trying to reach out and say that places like First Light, like us, Food for SNL, we can help you fill in those gaps that you need filled. And same with who else? Say, pretty much any of these so-called marginalized populations, we have been doing such a big focus on that cross-sectional approach to ensure that we cover all of those areas. And there is help for every single one of them. It's just a matter that we have to make sure that they know that this is available.
And do abuse in certain communities come with other baggage, so to speak? You know what I mean? That it isn't just about the abuse itself, but there are other systemic issues surrounding that?
Oh, definitely. There could be the mental health issues, addictions. Oftentimes, abuse stems from something such as intergenerational trauma. There are so many factors that it's not just a couple of counseling sessions that can fix it. It's something much deeper. And that's definitely something that we do see.
Is there help out there for the abuser themselves? Somebody who recognizes in themselves the potential for this or has seen it in the past and wants to change. Is there anything available to those people who want to make the change but don't know how to go about it?
Most certainly. There is support for people who are hurting or are afraid that they could hurt their partner. Oftentimes, there are abusers out there who just don't know how to stop the anger or the issues leading back again to that intergenerational trauma or addiction. And we are here to help you, too. If you recognize those behaviors within yourself and you're looking to take that first step to move towards something healthier, we will lend a confidential ear to you. There's also the mental health and addictions line. There's countless organizations. The organizations that help the victims and survivors of abuse often also have resources for the people who are creating the abuse.
So now that some of these restrictions are being lifted and people are moving around a little more freely, we're starting to get back to some feeling of normalcy within certain restrictions. Are organizations that deal with domestic violence and other issues, are they starting to play real catch up here now? I know you've seen a bit of an influx in calls, but is there a lot of work ahead?
Yeah, so we've definitely seen an influx in calls. It's been over a 400% increase in terms of our online interactions. And again, we've gone from 1 to 2 calls a day to up to 10 calls a day in terms of crisis and emergency support. I forgot the question.
Is there a real catch-up being played here? Like, do you have enough resources to deal with the demand?
We're keeping up with it as best as we can. People may think initially that because the restrictions are lifting and because the weather is getting a little better, that it would be going down. But we're actually expecting another uptick in activity because there are still a whole group of other people who were within these domestic violence situations that they either might have not had a loved one to help support them. They might not have had that access to technology. And now that things are loosening with restrictions and organizations are starting to open back up, this may be their first opportunity to get out. And this is a really good opportunity for them to escape from their violent situation. In terms of resources, we've been very fortunate to get some funding from different organizations. And we have a couple of student positions opening up or that are opening up soon, and we're going to be evolving a lot of our work to be turned into webinars and just take it to that next step of community engagement. And we're also accepting any donations possible to go towards our care packages that we give to the survivors we serve, whether it's monetary donations so we can buy based on immediate need, or grocery store gift cards, inspirational books, toiletry, PPE, adult coloring books, anything that we can give them to give them some comfort in this time is greatly accepted.
How does one get involved? You mentioned off the top that a lot of people who are involved with organizations to help people who have survived or are experiencing domestic violence are survivors themselves. Is that what you tend to see?
There's definitely that intrinsic passion or that lived experience that makes you want to help others. But honestly, it comes down to, you know, again, we all deserve to live this happy, healthy life free from the fear of violence. And you just need to, you know, I ask of anyone, above all else, just besides paying attention to your surroundings, what you need to do really is look at your own individual skill sets and technical proficiencies, because we all have value to offer and we all have potential to make a positive difference in our communities. And the example of the social media marketing background that I have was a natural inclination for me to go on to create Unsafe at Home platform. And it was something that I could do in the safety of my home. It took about 20 hours to create and countless more to maintain. But it was something that I could do with my skills, because I can't speak for the rest of my board, but I would be inclined to say that they're the same way. I've never been the kind of person that sees something in our community happening and saying, who's doing something about it? What's the government going to do? I tend to think, what can I do to mitigate this? And if more people are just aware, paying attention to their surroundings, you have everything you need within you to make a difference in this world. And I implore you to take that time to harness that energy into something good. Look at what you're good at doing, what you think your skills and your strengths are. Look at what you're passionate about in terms of your values and community issues. Put it together and see how you can make that difference.
So what's the first step for somebody who wants to get involved?
Well, if it's Violence Prevention Avalon East, you can reach out to me anytime, or Valerie. Our information is on the website. And it's just reaching out. And there are, I've been involved in community for years, and I'm readily accessible on all social media platforms and through Violence Prevention Avalon East. So if anyone wants to have an individual conversation around that, they can. But there, I can't really think of a way off the top that you could, but I do have some great resources on the platform on how you can get involved in the community in terms of the pandemic itself and violence. Iris Kirby House may be looking for volunteers. We're looking for volunteers to continue spreading the word of what we're doing in the community. And everybody needs help right now. There is such a demand that the organizations that are out there on the ground doing this work would be happy to have you approach them and say, I'm really passionate about this topic and I am good at A, B, C, D. How can I give my help to you right now? Or do you know an organization that could do it? Because we are not competitors in this community. We are partners. We work together towards the same goal. And if you tell me that you're passionate about violence and you have a skill set that maybe one of us may already have, then I might say, you know what? This community or this community organization in particular needs it. How about you reach out to so-and-so?
You mentioned off the top that you have some lived experience here. Is this how you channeled that energy, if you will?
Most definitely. Lived experience. I've been able to really understand the way in which a trauma-informed mind works. It's really helped me form the vocabulary that is on our website to make it easily searchable, because I think from a lived experience perspective as I write the vocabulary for the website. And I saw that there was a huge gap, and I had a lot of community involvement beforehand, before my own situation, and I knew that I could do something about it.
Did you have support in your particular circumstance?
I did, yes. I am very fortunate. I have amazing people around me, and I recognize that not everybody has that situation, and that I am so fortunate that because I was involved in the community, I knew what resources existed. I have an amazing family, an amazing husband, amazing friends and coworkers, and I know that that is not normal in a situation of abuse. So because I was fortunate to have a very convenient recovery process to get me to a better place than prior, I want to harness that, it, essentially privilege, and show people that there are options for them as well, and that I will advocate for them, and violence prevention will advocate them as a greater entity to help them get what they need and deserve.
Is it important for victims and survivors to speak to somebody who knows where they're coming from?
It definitely helps, because the empathy that's there of understanding that, you know, even though logically the survivor of violence and everyone else knows that you should leave the situation, call the police, file charges, what have you, that's a lot easier said than done. And there's also a lot of imposter syndrome and mental health issues going around in their head as well. And reminding to keep them grounded is a huge plus as someone who has that lived experience and then has the tools to be able to go into society or community and help others who may not be as far along on their own recovery.
Courtney Clark, she's a member of the board of directors with Violence Prevention Avalon East. This has been a fascinating conversation. We have just a minute or two left. I wanted you to take a moment now and give your big takeaway here. If you have one message for people listening who recognize something here and want to do something moving forward, what's your message?
Again, please go to our website, violencepreventionae.ca, and read the information in our Unsafe at Home platform so you can be aware as you go out throughout your life to be able to better spot and know how to handle what it is that you see happening. Again, try and look at ways that you can utilize your own skill sets and proficiencies to do good in the world. And honestly, my biggest message is more so for the provincial government. We need our provincial government to invest in a domestic violence task force that holds significant emphasis on gender-based violence. We need to ensure that they're tracking the stats and listening to the voices of our most vulnerable communities so that we have an action plan that considers them as we come out of the pandemic, so we go out of the pandemic better than we were going into it. Because there's a lot of progress being made, a lot of great things happening, but there's still a lot of progress to be done.
What's government's reaction been to that idea to date?
There's been some mention within the provincial election itself, but right now we are thankful that after the years of advocating for the domestic abuse helpline that we have gotten that win under our belt. So we are so thankful for the provincial government for doing this. The next step is that domestic violence task force and that focus of gender-based violence.
Who ideally should be on something like that?
Executive directors or the leaders of all of the different organizations, a couple of those from the organizations that you see listed on our local directory, people who are mostly on the ground, whether it's the Transition Houses, Iris Kirby, Status of Women Council, us. We need to have a representative from, social development. We need to have people from the police force, because we all need to be communicating with one another and on the same team to have that trust that people can reach out to us to end violence for good.
Courtney Clark, I really appreciate you taking the time with us this afternoon. It's been a fascinating conversation, and hopefully we've done some good here today. I really appreciate you taking the time with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate this as well.
And once again, the hotline is 1-888-709-7090. Courtney Clark, thanks. And thanks to our listeners. Really appreciate your time this past week, as brief as it was. We'll be back on Monday with another interesting show, so stay tuned for that.